So this month, as many of you know, I'm teaching this class on Wednesday evenings on concentration, introduction to concentration, to samadhi. And I've talked a fair amount in different times this month about why and so forth about the samadhi and concentration class. Today, and coming down here to speak and thinking what I might talk about and thinking how, you know, in a sense today, I also decided I'd devote the whole month around this Wednesday class and the Mondays and Sunday talks that I give to be about concentration as opposed to more mindfulness talks. And I wasn't expecting to come today, and so today was kind of a free day. So here we have an opportunity to talk about this in a way I wouldn't have otherwise. So what would I talk about? And I'm not sure I could have something coherent to say. Maybe I never do, but because what I want to convey or talk about is maybe something very personal, or inspired by something personal for me, and that is that concentration practice is supported or inspired or fueled, can be fueled or inspired by love and by faith. And the sense that when we sit down to meditate, sit down to practice concentration or mindfulness, that it can be seen as an act of love or an experience of love or a connection with love, a connection with faith. And is faith and love so separate from each other? Are they connected somehow? What's the connection between faith and love? In my own life, I think of faith and love as being very much connected, because what I have faith in is often what I then love, there's some kind of relationship for me between those two. Classically, there are many teachings about meditation in the suttas and elsewhere in Buddhism. Some of the teachings are the teachings that support those factors, those qualities, those practices that support meditation practice. And one of these lists that support meditation practice is called the five faculties. And these five faculties are five mental aspects of the mind or the psyche that can be developed as we meditate. And I think of these five faculties as being the grammar of meditation. That it's the organizing of these five faculties into a kind of a sentence, into a syntax, or into a balance classically, that supports the meditation practice over time and lets it go mature in a very deep way. And these five are faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom or insight. And then it's sometimes said these five exist in balance with each other. And part of the job of a meditation practitioner and also of a teacher is to somehow track these five to see are they balanced with each other. Because many times people become imbalanced and then the meditation doesn't proceed in a smooth way. So either end, you imagine kind of maybe a triangle with mindfulness on the top. Then on the base, there would be, on either corner, would be faith and wisdom. And faith and wisdom are said to be existing in balance with each other, in relationship to each other. They need to be balanced. You can't, if you have too much faith or too much wisdom, things don't go well. And then a little bit further up the triangle, closer to the peak, then is effort and concentration. And those two have to be balanced. If you're too calm, get too concentrated, then the mind becomes dull or sleepy. It doesn't really become sharp enough to do the work. If it's too much energy in the practice, then it tends to lend itself to becoming agitated or restless. In balancing these things, it isn't that you're supposed to kind of tune one of them down necessarily, have less concentration or less energy. You're supposed to tune up the one that's lacking. So actually, you have a very high pitch of very vital energy as the meditation practice develops, together with a very high pitch of calm, relaxed concentration. So the concentration practice, the concentration state, the concentration factor, is something which is actually very vital and dynamic. It's not something which is, soporific. And the image I've been using, I hope I didn't use it last time I talked to you here, but I think it's Sunday and the Wednesday class, is the image of a candle flame. Concentration is, or the balance of concentration and energy is when the candle flame is unflickering. And if the candle flame is flickering around, it's unstable, it's not still, it's not peaceful, it's not concentrated. But when it's really still, the candle flame, you can't say the candle flame is lazy or undynamic. It's a very dynamic event, the candle flame. It's burning and active and vital, and it's still, you know, within the flame itself, it's, you know, probably a lot of movement of, but it's very dynamic. Same thing with in meditation. When the mind becomes very still, a concentrated mind, it needs to be balanced with a certain kind of vitality where it's still very dynamic, very alert. So a tremendous stillness and peace, a tremendous concentration together with a very dynamic quality. Then on the top of the triangle is mindfulness. And it said mindfulness never needs, you can never have too much mindfulness. So it doesn't need to be balanced by anything. Just mindfulness, you can go all the way. But on the base of this pyramid, then, would be faith and insight, faith and wisdom. If you have too much wisdom, too much understanding, or too much insight, it can lend itself to being having an intellectual approach to the Dharma. It's all about ideas and thoughts, and about understanding, and getting the right understanding, and holding the right understanding. And it can be kind of dry. If there's too much faith, then it can be blind faith, and the person does things foolishly. It can lend itself to being overly devotional, where the sense of devotion is kind of so gushing that the person never gets around to meditate, never gets around to understanding what's really life about, but it so thinks that, you know, Buddhism or practice or the teacher is so wonderful that their discriminating powers of and their intelligence, in a sense, to reflect and understand what's going on for themselves falls away. You need to have the ability to be intelligent and involved in your practice, using your powers of discrimination, clear seeing, together with a faith. It's kind of an active and perhaps a little more passive quality, maybe. But the faith part is very important. And that's kind of trying to narrow it out to this topic I want to talk about tonight, faith and love. And faith, over and over again, is talked about as being a very important, very helpful quality for a Buddhist practice, from mindfulness practice, meditation practice, concentration practice. And I don't know if, you know, different people have different levels of faith, and different people have different relationships to faith. And some people are aversive to the word, and some people have a very strong faith disposition towards faith, and so they're filled with faith. You know, they're just, you know, filled with faith and ready to kind of do things blindly. Now, I want to start by saying point out how useful faith is for meditation practice, because if you sit down to meditate, or you do any spiritual practice, the way that you relate to that practice affects how you engage with it, how you throw yourself into it, how much effort you put into it. If you sit down with a certain amount of faith that this is, you know, or a lot of faith that this is a really great thing, then when you sit down, you're really happy to be there. And you really, if the faith is really strong, you feel, oh, this is really, not only is it, I'm happy to be here, this is really maybe the most important thing or very important thing for me to do right now. And so the mind then is directed to be present, to be here with the practice. If there is not a lot of faith in what you're doing, there's a lot of doubt or a lot of hesitancy, or just, you know, you've read a book and the book says it's a good thing for you to do, and your mother tells you it's a good thing to do, and, you know, but you don't really have any faith in it, then you sit down to meditate and the mind is not going to be so interested in being devoted to the practice, and it's going to be go in the directions of those things it has much more faith in. Thinking about dinner, or thinking about, you know, relationships, or thinking about work, or thinking about whatever it might be. And so it's very hard to get the mind concentrated if there's no faith in the value of meditation or concentration practice or what we're doing. Faith is, in part, brings the emotional aspect into play with a spiritual practice. And I think it's very important to think of a spiritual practice, at least Buddhist practice, to have an emotional element to it. And the faith is the emotional element. The wisdom is more the intellectual, perhaps, aspect. But an emotional aspect. And I know for me and for a number of people I've known over the years, there's a feeling that the emotional part of our the emotional part of who we are, maybe it's not supposed to come play a part or be a support to the practice itself. But there's nothing wrong with our emotions, in principle about emotions in general. There's nothing that inherently is distracting about. I should say, maybe say this more carefully. Emotions can be very, very helpful and perhaps an essential element of the Buddhist path. So we want to cultivate certain emotions and have those emotions support us in our life. Now, some emotions have the function of concentrating the mind. If we're afraid, if there's a lot of fear, the mind tends to be concentrated very well on the tiger that's approaching. Or, you know, the impending taxes. Or whatever, you know, the threat that's out there. So people, you know, will select out of the, they're very concentrated to select out of the environment certain things because they have this mood or this emotion of fear that's operating. If you're angry, anger also has a quality of concentrating the mind, concentrating the focus of attention. But that kind of concentration of both fear and anger tends to filter or color or be selective by what gets picked up, what you see. If you, love also, in a sense, concentrates the attention, where you tend only to see the good things, the wonderful things about the person we're in love with. It kind of, you know, makes us put the rosy glasses on. Anger makes us put the kind of dark glasses over everything. But it both selects and concentrates the attention to some degree. I used to be very concentrated in, I remember my French class in high school, very concentrated. For this woman who was across the way in the classroom, the other side of the classroom, I spent probably 6 months focused in French class on her. And I didn't learn much French, but I certainly, you know, was focused. So when there's faith, faith is an emotional aspect that helps concentrate the mind on what it's doing. So when I went to, this is a story I've often told, when I went to Burma and practiced there with other Westerners, other Americans, one of the things we noticed was that the Burmese would get enlightened much faster than the Americans. They would go into really deep practice. And the Burmese would come, they'd have a month, they'd come and do, they'd leave their busy lives, they'd do a month of meditation practice and attain the first level of enlightenment in that tradition. And, you know, we'd be there 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, five, you know, looking at these Burmese coming and going, you know, why is it so easy for them? You know, we're still slugging away, you know. And the difference, one of the differences, it has to do with the element of faith. That when the Burmese came to sit and meditate, it was like kind of, it was really deeply embedded in their culture and their psyche, and their whole growing up was to be a Buddhist and go to temples and practice. And for them to go sit and meditate in a temple was to come home and to feel really at home. And when you feel really at home and settled someplace, it's a lot easier to be further settled, to get concentrated and get to work. If you're not settled, so but for us Westerners who are, you know, who most of us and probably none of us back then were raised as Buddhists, it was going to a foreign culture, foreign practice, foreign religion, foreign temple, foreign language. And our parents didn't want us to be there. And so we would sit down to meditate, and we'd have these conversations with our parents, you know, justifying why we were there. And then we would have these conversations with a teacher about, you know, well, you know, I'm not sure what you're teaching is a good idea. You know, I think I'd like to do it a different way. And you're telling me to follow the breath, but really what I like to do is chant my mantra. And you're telling me to do walking meditation, but I really like to jog. And, you know, and then who are you to tell me what to do? You know, I'm going to find out for myself. And I don't believe in blind faith, and I'm an individual, and I'll do it my way. And there's all these things that goes on in the mind that makes it difficult for the mind to finally rest and be settled and, you know, here I am, this is what I'm going to do, to feel at home in this present moment, in this practice. Faith is that element that helps us feel at home when we sit down and inspired to do this. This is what we want to do. And that inspiration or that faith lends itself to a feeling of love. So when we sit down to meditate, we're entering into a realm of love, of joy, of satisfaction, of feeling at home. Now I know that we often don't feel that when we sit down to meditate. Even people with a lot of faith don't have that. But when I sit down to meditate and I'm off, or I'm suffering a lot, I have a lot of faith anyway, and that faith then becomes a context for holding my suffering. So that I have a lot of faith in the practice itself, in the practice of being present for what's happening. I have a lot of faith that that's a valuable thing to do, as opposed to having faith, I have to figure it out, I have to solve the problem, I have to run away from it, I have to deny it, I have to ignore it, I have to, you know, find just, you know, the perfect solution to, I don't know, all these things I start doing and doubting. Because of the practice, I have faith, it's really powerful to offer my sense of presence to what's happening and to hold what's happening with a very powerful presence, to really see clearly what it is. And even though it might be very uncomfortable, there's a kind of a joy, a kind of love that I feel. Oh, I get to do this. Now I'm going to hold this with my awareness, with my knowing, with my attention. And that's really helpful for me when I sit down and meditate. So how is it when you all, each of you, sits down to meditate? Do you sit down, you know, when you sit down to meditate, what's the context that you sit down into? You know, what's the attitude that you have about what you're doing? Look at that attitude. Is it pragmatic? Is it utilitarian? You know, you've heard that following your breath and being mindful helps reduce stress, and you're really tired of having all the stress and you'd like to be eliminate stress. That's a great motivation. It's a fantastically wonderful motivation. That motivation probably has very little faith in it. It might have some confidence in it or some benefit of the doubt, but it doesn't have the kind of faith that's filled with love or devotion or joy. And that's a possibility, is to sit down and have an attitude of this kind of deep, heartfelt faith, love, joy, delight, feeling at homeness when we sit down. So when you sit down, what's the attitude you have? And I'm not saying all this to say that you should have it be different than how you are, but if you don't have some sense of joy or delight or inspiration with the practice as you sit down, then I think it's very valuable to look at what is going on. Why is that lacking? Is there some ways in which you can infuse your practice with those qualities? Do you want to? Would you rather not? Are you afraid of those qualities? Do you feel they're too sentimental and Buddhist practice shouldn't be sentimental? Love shouldn't be part of it. I mean, my teacher in Burma, Pandita, he was the last person probably on the planet you'd think of as being sentimental. And a very tough, stern kind of teacher, kind of like a Rinzai general. He would raise his eyebrow and we'd wither. So, you know, you have to be serious when you practice with him. And there was a period of my practice where I would sit down to meditate and I would just be bathed in love. And every time I brought my attention to something in my body, anything in my psychophysical world, I'd bring my attention to it like awareness was like a spotlight. I'd bring my attention to it, it would disappear. And so that part of my body disappeared. I'd bring my attention somewhere else, and that part of my body disappeared. And sometimes I felt like it was a game, like I had an eraser, and I would just erase my, you know, erase the cartoon, you know, until there was no one there anymore. It was kind of fun. But I had this attitude that I was just loving everything away, because my attention was just imbued with this tremendous sense of love and delight. And I remember telling a friend of mine at the time there that, you know, I can't tell my teacher this. that I'm loving everything away. You know, he would just, that eyebrow would go up. And so where am I? Huh?
Did you tell him?
No, I never told him. There wasn't any need. You know, with children and teachers, sometimes you choose your battles. So what I hope that I've conveyed so far is that, you know, the faith makes a difference. And the question is, are there ways it can make a difference for you? And what is your relationship to this issue of faith? And do you have a faith relationship to what you're doing? You sit down. Is it just a pragmatic utilitarian thing that you're doing? Or is there some deeper sense of devotion or love that goes with how you sit down to be in the present moment, to be here? Is the present moment a place of feeling at home or feeling delight or feeling love? If not, why not? The investigation of why not is a very valuable aspect of mindfulness practice. Maybe what you'll find, if you investigate why not, the reasons for why not don't have a very solid basis. And maybe they'll fall away. And one of the things that gives me a lot of faith is that my experience over and over again is when I don't base my life on anything, any understanding, I don't hold on to anything. I'm willing to let go of everything. Any idea of the future, any idea of a goal, any idea of becoming someone, any idea of right understanding, any idea of wrong understanding. When I let go, that in that space of letting go, there seems to bubble up a deep sense of at-homeness, a deep sense of love and delight. I found over and over again that in that presence, that unfounded presence, that pure presence is not based on anything, that I can trust how things unfold. So when I sit down to meditate, I come with this history of my experience, which lends itself to feeling a lot of trust in the process. And I have kind of a knowledge that's happened over and over again, that if I do this well, then that in itself strengthens the love, brings it stronger. So when I sit down to meditate, it's not just simply, I bring something along with me. Or I sit down and there's an environment that this is my temple. My body is my temple. The Burmese go to their temple and they feel at home in their temple. I suppose a devout Catholic might feel very home going to their, you know, their church and sitting there. And for me, my temple is my body, body, mind, when I sit down. And so I feel when I sit down, it's like this really happy place to go and be. It's a really delightful thing to be here. Even when my mind is totally scattered, in conflict with people in the world around me, I feel stressed. There's a lot of, you know, times I feel really terrible inside. But it's my temple. And when I sit down to be in that temple, I can bring all that along, and it's held in a very different way. And because it's held in a different way, it's a lot easier for me then to be focused on doing the practice that I want to do, whether it's mindfulness or concentration, to be engaged. So what do we have faith in? And there's a wide range of things that a person can have a faith in. And that's, you know, each of you will answer that question very differently. But do you have something you have faith in that you feel maybe is reliable, that doesn't give you a sense of certainty in terms of now you really understand the truth, but rather gives you a sense of feeling at ease or feeling at home or feeling in love or feeling joy about sitting down and paying attention? Is that a possibility for you? If you can find that, then the practice, I think, will proceed much more easily. And you'll be much less interested in the other things that we have implicitly a lot of faith in. If you're trying to work out the relationship with your mother, or with your boss, or with your child, and you're over and over and over again reviewing that and reviewing that and reviewing that in your meditation, there's a tremendous amount of faith you have that somehow your powers of rumination are going to provide the solution. Maybe you wouldn't think of that way, I mean, you wouldn't think of that way, you know, explicitly. But implicitly, there's a lot of faith in that thinking mind. Can we have faith in something different? And the last thing I'll say, that for those of you who are a little bit aversive to the notion of faith, that in my, for me, the most powerful faith that I thing that I have faith in is faith in nothing. So it isn't so much a matter of having faith in something, but faith in nothing, not in the sense of the faith in that, the faith that life can be lived, or life is trustable, or life is fulfilled, when we don't depend on anything. We don't need to depend on anything. And the path of practice is to learn how to let go of all the things that we think we need to depend on, to discover that experience of grace, that experience of freedom, that experience of luminosity, of vitality, that is there when we're present, not dependent on anything. So, those are my thoughts. It's we have about 6-7 minutes before 9. You're a captive audience. I presented you something a little bit that's heartfelt for me. So, you know, I wanted to mention that part of what faith is what allows you to put your heart in what you're doing. And can you put your heart into the practice? So I kind of a little bit offered you kind of a heartfelt, I hope, feeling of something that's very important for me. I don't want you to, any of you to get too personal. You know, you can take it just as far as you feel comfortable. But what I'd like to ask each of you, in return for what I've done here, is if you would turn to someone next to you and talk about something for about 5 minutes that somehow is a reaction to this talk that I've given. So that's pretty broad. Hopefully you can find something safe to talk about. And just 5 minutes, if you do that, just turn quietly. And talk a little bit quietly, because otherwise it'll feel like a cocktail party here. And then I'll ring a bell after 5 minutes. And then we'll sit quietly for a minute and then end the evening. Please. So, let's sit quietly for 60 seconds. So if you feel that faith is an important element of a practice life, then you might give some consideration to how you can strengthen that faith. What are the healthy ways, the useful ways, of strengthening, intensifying, or developing your faith so that it becomes a more helpful source of inspiration, of delight, and helps you feel at home when you sit down to do the practice. May each of you find a way to deepen your faith in such a way you find the place where you no longer need to depend on anything, including faith. So may all of you be happy. Thank you.